Well, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, as well as the Surgeon General, are calling the use of e-cigarettes or vapes among teenagers an epidemic. On the phone to discuss the public health concern, I have Dr. Michael Meesom. He is a psychiatrist, also a vaping addiction specialist. Good morning to you, doctor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So one report shows teen vaping increasing almost 80% in the last year and some 3.6 million middle and high school students vaping regularly. You work with addictive patients. What's your experience with young people using vape products?
Well, I have concerns about kids using nicotine and uses increasing. And, you know, nicotine is one of those very, very addictive substances, and kids can use nicotine and be addicted in one day and struggle with addiction for the rest of their life.
So is nicotine more popular than THC in these vaping devices?
To be honest with you, it sort of depends. It's sort of local, cultural. And some kids, I have concerns about THC as well, but nicotine is absolutely a gateway drug.
Yeah. Is this worse, though, than what we saw with kids just using regular cigarettes, these numbers?
Well, vaping in both cases has chemicals in there that we're not sure about the safety reasons. I see people all the time that vape nicotine thinking that it's going to help them quit smoking, and the data is pretty clear that people that vape nicotine actually end up smoking cigarettes as well, so that doesn't really help them quit. But we have to be honest, there's actually less chemicals in there than there is in a normal cigarette. It's not the nicotine that causes cancer. It's the other chemicals in the cigarette that causes cancer.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of the number of users, though, when I start talking about this increase of 80%, I mean, is that much higher than a kid taking up regular cigarettes for the first time?
Yeah, it's increased recently. And I think part of it has to do with marketing from the industry. I mean, they have great flavors that appeal to younger people, like bubblegum flavor, green apple flavor, candy-like flavors.
Hmm. So you think that's the draw, or does it maybe have anything to do with seeing what they can get away with? I mean, it's like we hear stories of kids in class, you know, having the vape up their sleeve and, you know, guessing whether or not they get caught or not, almost a game for them.
Well, you know, I think it's a normal part of growing up these days. I think it is the rule rather than the exception that kids these days experiment with various substances just because they're so available. I talk to my children all the time about, you know, have rather than you can't vape, I just ask them if they have vaped yet and then share my concerns and tell them how much I care about them. And, you know, it's a little different for me growing up with an addiction psychiatrist. It's got to be unique for a child.
Yeah. So is it any more addictive than vaping tea, nicotine, any more addictive than a regular cigarette?
Well, you know, in addiction, we talk about two things. We talk about the steepness of the upslope of the concentration of the substance, and if you inhale a substance, it's pretty quickly absorbed if you inhale it through the lungs. So it's just like using something IV. So that makes it more addictive. The steeper the upslope, and the steeper the increase in concentration over time.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit just about the health problems, maybe unique to teenagers from nicotine?
Well, the main concern I have is about somebody becoming addicted in one day. You know, we really haven't talked that much about THC. And with the legalization of THC and teenagers vaping THC, it's a way for them to kind of get away with using marijuana-related products. And I just think with the legalization of THC in all the states where it's legal, that people believe that THC is safer than it actually is. But it's proven in the literature to be addictive and have a withdrawal syndrome and cause problems in people's lives.
Yeah, so given the new medical cannabis law, that's coming to Utah. I mean, do you think you'll be asked by patients then to write prescriptions?
I've already had two people call my private practice and ask me if I will write the letter for them to get cannabis in Utah. I just don't think we're there yet. I think the state's going to regulate it, and nobody knows what the plan is and what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, when we talk about THC, we hear the argument, well, nobody ODs on THC, unlike alcohol poisoning, perhaps, or, you know, even an opioid overdose. I mean, talk to me a little bit more about your concerns with THC, in particular for teens.
Well, you know, THC is addictive. The potency is greatly increased. And, you know, like I mentioned before with the flavors with nicotine vaping, you know, nowadays you can buy cookies and gummies, and, you know, it's a way to appeal to young kids. And it does have that addictive potential. It's very hard to overdose on marijuana. It's very hard to have super high concentrations of marijuana when smoking a marijuana cigarette, but that is probably an increased risk with vaping and getting things with really high concentrations. Concentrations of THC have greatly increased over the years since I was a child back in the olden days.
Yeah. And we don't regulate alcohol dosing. I mean, is there a difference here? Should we be regulating the THC dosing?
That's another problem with THC and getting, quote, juice, unquote, with THC in it, is it's not really regulated. And if you go somewhere to buy it, you really don't know what you're getting. You don't know the ratio of THC to CBD, for example. You don't know how strong it is. You have to sort of put your faith into the place where you're getting it from, like dispensaries, you know, in Colorado, for example. It's just not regulated. We really don't know what's in there.
Yeah. And then back to tobacco here. I mean, we have big public service campaigns, you know, against smoking cigarettes. I mean, every package is labeled, nothing like what I saw in Europe in terms of buying cigarettes there. However, do we have any of that then with these juices, you know, that are being marketed? I mean, do they have the same kind of deathly warnings?
I have not seen those on any of the products that have been shown to me. I don't think we have those warnings. And to be honest with you, I don't know how much difference those warnings do once somebody becomes addicted.
Yeah. So what are you seeing in your practice then?
Well, you know, we're sort of talking about two things. I see people all the time that vape nicotine. You know, we have to be honest, it is safer than smoking cigarettes, but we still don't know what the chemicals are in there. And they always, always tell me that they're doing that to quit, but it's just rare that they actually succeed. And then I'm seeing an increase in vaping or using juice for marijuana in vaping pipes. You know, they get that from wherever they get it and put it in the pipes. And I see a lot more doing what they can to conceal that from people around them, just to hide their use of.
Yeah. So before we close, I mean, what's your advice then to parents who may be concerned?
You know, it's pretty simple. In one sentence, my advice to parents is just talk about it. Talk about it at the dinner table. Talk about it. You say, oh, I heard this thing on the radio today, and they were talking about vaping. And do you see that? And when was the last time you did that? What do you think about it? And then you just share your concerns and let them know that you care about your child.
And keep it and keep that conversation happening.
Yeah.
It's not like a one-time deal here, huh?
No.
Okay.
Always. Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks for your time. Dr. Michael Meesom, again, a psychiatrist and vaping addiction specialist. You're listening to the local 623 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. The Park City Council meeting in a special meeting tomorrow in the studio with a preview. I have Assistant City Manager Matt Dias along with Community Development Director Anne Laurent. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Council meeting starting at 6 o'clock. Staff asking the City Manager Matt to sign an agreement for two on-call charter transportation companies to provide on-call event transportation services in and around Park City. It's a $160,000 budget request. What's it for?
So this is to augment our sort of existing fleet and our existing operations. As you know, things get more and more kind of intense and busy around here, the eventuality that we have bus shortages or other things becomes more and more real. So we're trying to make sure that we're planning ahead. And Alfred Knott sort of stole this one from Tahoe, where they have this kind of on-call bus service when they have special events and other things. And long-term, it can reduce your need for kind of permanent rolling stock when you're able to augment for special events and times that town gets very, very busy.
So who's going to be doing the calling to say, you're needed?
So that would be our transit department. They would be, calling the two providers. I think there's a 5-day provision. So it is actually pretty short term. We could have something come up suddenly, or we could lose, if we had some certain thing happen to our fleet unexpectedly, with 5-day notice, we could have several buses up here to augment our system. And, that's something that, again, we're kind of stealing from another jurisdiction as a best practice, trying to plan ahead and making sure we've got continuity in the case of an emergency or special events and other things.
Okay. Well, of course, we've got Sundance and World Championships coming up. Do you anticipate that these 1,000 hours that you're budgeting for will be used?
Prime example. I think we'll use some. We're not sure. It's, some of it will depend on inclement weather and other things, but we'll probably try it out. That's the intent. But really, this is a longer-term vision. We'll probably have this contract in place for several years going forward.
So this 1,000 hours is for the entire year, or?
It is, and arguably the costs are pretty comparable to our own operating costs or our hour per hour cost. Obviously, we're running routes that we've never run in the county before. We've seen what happens during inclement weather or when we have traffic disruptions. And so I think the community, the citizens, the mayor and council are looking at us to be kind of thoughtful and plan ahead, and we're planning for that contingency.
Yeah. Can they just, kind of jump in here, though? I mean, they don't know the bus routes. They don't know the system. Yeah. So how is it that they're
No, it's a good question. It's a great question. So we would obviously, we try to put them on the easiest routes first and foremost, the ones that have kind of the least intensity and aren't necessarily in the most congested areas. But these are experienced drivers. We're dealing with a lay bus and driver provider. Many of those drivers are familiar with our system or even familiar with our routes. They've been working in the Salt Lake Valley or up here for 25 or 30 years. And so we'll be using this for Eckerd Park and Ride, maybe Richardson Flats someday. There's a lot of different ways, special routes during Sundance that we could use this service if we have to run, a trip or service in the event that, something is wrong and it's a direct route. So there's a lot of different ways we can use this.
Okay. Also scheduled to approve the Master Festival license for the World Championships. This is a level 5. Is this the first time, I guess, Sundance and World Champs, the first level 5 of the season?
Yeah, I believe so. And obviously, we're really excited about it. I think I want to take a minute, if I could, to thank everyone. Thus far, we've had a tremendous holiday season, 2018 and 19. And I can't even begin to speak of the man hours that go into shoveling and plowing. And, Leslie, we look out your window today and our folks are hard at work clearing the streets and Main Street. So I want to give a big shout out and thank you to everyone and the residents for dealing with the intensity. But we've got some really exciting things coming up, and I know we'll be followed by USSA. So I don't want to kind of steal their thunder talking about the FIS event. But we have people on our staff that have been planning this for 2 years. We have a very, very comprehensive special event plan that is in council's packet that covers transit operations, parking infrastructure, public safety, you name it. So if residents are interested in that, very, very comprehensive event plan.
Okay. Council also scheduled to approve its regular meetings for the coming year. We know that January, we're talking about just Tuesday meetings for, somebody's social schedule. I never really heard why we're moving this, but Do we move back to Thursdays then for the rest of the year?
We will, and so that's another benefit to us doing this. Every year in the beginning of the year, we have a statutory requirement to lay out the calendar for the public, and that enables us to have a predictable meeting schedule going forward. And so for our redevelopment authority, for the housing authority, for our water services district, it spells out the meeting calendar for the entire year. So if there is a resident that's interested in making plans ahead of time, they will be able to have a very predictable schedule. And by and large, we are returning to Thursdays from here on out after the month of January concludes.
Okay. We usually see this time of year also disclosure statements from council members. I don't see that on the agenda.
Not yet. I presume you will when the city attorney's office comes out with that.
Okay. Let's see. Talk to you and then about the under new business, the annual housing update from Park City Heights. This is, of course, the housing development there just at 248 and US 40. They're asking to amend something, I believe. What is Ivory Homes looking to do?
Okay, well, they actually went to the Planning Commission earlier in the year to amend their phasing, primarily because they wanted to build their road infrastructure and use that additional road infrastructure on another phase to build a water tank to stay compliant with their development agreement to get that public infrastructure in. So we're actually very supportive of from a staff perspective of getting that public infrastructure completed. And as a result of that, when we went back and looked at the housing mitigation plan, there was some conversation in there about phasing and what had to come before what. And so we wanted to update that and maintain compliance with the housing mitigation plan.
Okay. So my understanding is that they're looking to adjust which units go on which lots. How would that affect this timeline then?
Right. So it's the timing of the units. And then you are correct, Leslie. It's also when they looked at, we have a very, at the end of 2015, I think it was December, we had a very detailed list of what size units, types of units, and which lots they went on. And they've looked at that a little more closely as they've continued to develop, and they've wanted to shift some around. The number of units, the size of units, and pricing of units, none of that's changing. They're just moving around which lots they're going on so they fit better on those lots.
Okay. And are we talking about holding up the affordable units getting built so that they can move forward with the market-priced housing, or...?
No, actually, that's a little bit of that's confusing because their development agreement talks about phase 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, which you would think is consecutive. But the way they're running their phases, they're running a lot of the different phases simultaneously with each other at the same time. So they are slightly behind currently of what they planned, which is 8 to 12 units per year. But they also have a significant number of building permits in the works, and so we anticipate them very shortly here to be jumping ahead of being ahead of schedule, and that's where they're planning to be. And that's why Council wanted an annual update from Ivory Homes to just check in on the progress and understand where they are. But right now, they're slightly short, but we anticipate that moving forward quickly.
It's been 13 years since we first saw the MPD and request for annexation here. It seems like they're way behind.
Right. I believe I saw final approvals in the staff report in 2011. So it's been about, 7-8 years since they had their MPD approval. And then, there was a significant delay due to soil remediation issues and a lot of other issues to work out. But since that time, since the end of 2015, they've been moving strong, and we want to keep them moving.
All right. Let's see. The original approval was for, 239 homes, 79 of those deemed as affordable. Given the cost of construction that we have seen each year, I mean, is there really anything affordable out there anymore?
Well, the affordable units were set by the resolutions and compliant with the resolutions. I will say that we never had a price restriction on the market rate. So I do think people see that the market rate units are maybe higher priced than they anticipated back when this project was approved. But that's the market driving those costs. But I will say that all the affordables are within the AMI restrictions of the housing resolutions, and there are different ones at play because keep in mind the 79 units was fulfilling some IHC units, some additional city units required because as part of the land sale, and then there's the 16 units that are just because of the housing obligation for the market rate homes that Ivory's building.
Yeah, so they do have to stick with an affordable formula that was approved 5 years ago?
They do. They do.
How is it that they are able to make up? I mean, it's like, I mean, it, when you see construction costs going up 20% a year, I mean, how is it that they can manage that?
Well, that's a great question to ask them, I think, at the meeting. But I will say, I think that's why the market rate prices are going up, because obviously they're covering their costs. And I will say that the AMI does shift, not as much as construction costs, but, you know, every year there's a new AMI set for this region that we use as part of the calculation.
Yeah. Speaking of soils, there was a Blue Ribbon Soils Commission that was established years ago, and we never heard anything about that. Is that something you followed up on at all?
I'm not aware of that. I know that it was resolved that, and I know that we have a plan in place, and it all has to meet EPA standards and go to the follow the proper processes. But I don't believe we're following any additional compliance beyond what the EPA requires.
Okay. Hey, Matt, can we talk a little bit about just the traffic we saw in town over the holiday weeks?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we have seen Carmageddon before. Basically standstill traffic, and that was really one particular day. Seems like this time around we saw it on several days. Any concerns and what we do going forward? Or is that just the part of being a resort town and having people here?
Well, that's the simple answer, is that you know, clearly we're going to have to get used to a sort of a new day in Park City. And there are going to be impacts to our behavior, you know, personally as a resident myself, how I'm getting around and when I'm choosing to use the resorts and when employees are coming and going. You know, I've actually reflected a lot about it, and I've been talking to a lot of our frontline staff in terms of public safety and transit planning. You know, by and large, I think so far we feel very, very fortunate. We fully understand that there were some days that there were some inconveniences to people leaving the resorts. I think there was one day in particular where we had inclement weather, and I think I heard your story in the radio where you said it took people, you know, 45 minutes to get from Deer Valley, you know, out of town, or even over an hour. You know, we're constantly working. We are constantly using marketing efforts, communication, buses, carpooling, incentives to try to get people to change their behavior. That being said, you know, we are constrained by the infrastructure that we have. We're in a slot canyon. There is only so much we can do. But I think by and large, the system actually worked very, very well. And I know that's hard for somebody here if they're sitting in their car or sitting in a bus. Conversely, I had family in town over the holidays that went to the Cottonwoods, and they spent 4.5 hours trying to get home from Alta that same day. Now, I'm not casting aspersion on that canyon versus ours or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, when we're in our holiday, when we're in our peak periods, we all need to do our part. And I just want the community to know that the city, the county, public safety, you know, we're doing everything that we can responsibly to try to make things as convenient as possible.
Yeah. It seems like really one of the big bottlenecks, though, are the cars trying to turn right onto Bonanza. Do we need to just block that off for buses and let the cars go around? I mean, to me, then at least somebody who chooses to take public transportation would get to where they need to go to, and they don't have to sit there frustrated with everybody else.
No, you're spot on, and I think we may get to that point, quite frankly. I'm not sure that we're quite there yet, and we are, you know, constantly evaluating things. We're working with Utah Highway Patrol. This holiday season, for the first time, we had a traffic control center that's using our old dispatch space in our police building, which has, you know, cameras of just about every single intersection in town. They are able to communicate directly with our transit department in the event that a lift goes down. Let's say at the canyons, for example, we can send trippers into the situation to move people around, buses instead of a lift. And we're able to trigger lights to keep them green. And we've got police officers at intersections making sure that cars aren't blocking the box. So to your point, we will take, you know, more aggressive measures as the traffic and congestion situation gets worse and worse. But we are also trying to balance a guest experience. You know, I think by and large, it was a tremendously successful holiday season. We did get hit hard one day with inclement weather, but I think our folks are feeling very positive and fortunate so far. I should temper my comments, though. We have, as you know, we have an incredibly busy month ahead of us with Sundance and World Cup. And so, you know, on behalf of the mayor and council and all the employees at the city, we're going to try to do our part. And we ask that, you know, to the extent that's possible, that residents and employees and businesses can do their part. We'd appreciate it because it's going to take a village. It's going to be a very, very busy time period. There will be some inconveniences. And we just want people to know that we're doing everything that we can to mitigate those responsibly.
Okay. And then real quick, January 28th, the start of the annual legislative session. Anything that you've got in the hopper here that...
excuse me, not directly. We do think it's going to be an incredibly interesting year, and it's good to have Ann here, who works on affordable housing. There's a very large affordable housing conversation going on at the legislature. You know, for a long time, this was really just sort of the Park City or maybe an upper-income community conversation, particularly in a state like Utah. But now it's kind of wound its way down the canyon, and the Wasatch Front is confronting these issues for the first time that we've been confronting for a long time. So there will be a very, very robust discussion between the development community and between cities and towns and counties and the regulators about how do we make things more affordable, but how do we also not kind of give the keys away to the to the kind of development or redevelopment community, just ad nauseum and just you know, let people develop kind of at free and at will. So we understand that smart planning and planning ahead is one of the things that Utah has been known for across the country. And we want to retain those values, but we do have some affordability issues. And it's interesting to see the Wasatch Front kind of confronting them for the first time. So I think that's going to be the big conversation at the legislature. And then, of course, we have, you know, issues like the marijuana situation that's happening. And, you know, none of that will actually be in effect for about a year or two. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see some curveball come down the line and then try to augment the existing bill that they just passed. So in particular, this affordability issue and affordable housing is going to be a big part of the conversation. And then there's always, you know, we had a plastic bag bill last year. We've heard that several legislators aren't happy with the way that went. We were very fortunate to have Tim Quinn and our representative on our side, and that we prevailed. But we're eyes wide open. The mayor and myself are heading down there today to work with people, and so we're working hard to represent Park City's interest down there.
Yeah, real quick, Ann, well, I've got you then. I mean, any advice that you have then for lawmakers as they begin to study, I mean, delve into this affordable housing issue?
Right. I think people are looking to Park City to try to compare, and then they're also trying to look at what their community specific is. So it's really about each community trying to figure out where they are and what their goals are around affordable housing. And so it's a nice conversation to get these communities together and talking about it. And there's been some really good conversations with the League and Cities and Towns. And I think it's going to continue beyond this year. This is just the start.
Yeah. And we see more than ever now is just the tie between affordable housing and transit. I mean, they've got to go hand in hand, yeah?
And jobs, correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. More than ever. Yeah.
Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
No, just thanks to everyone for a great holiday season and Happy New Year.
Okay. Thank you. And Laurent and Matt Dias. KPCW News Time now, 8:41. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. 46. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. On the phone with me now with an update from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, I have spokesman Tom Webb. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So let's start with the Alpine competition. Michaela Schifrin, again, just impressing all of us.
Michaela's season just goes from strength to strength. This weekend, she was out in Zagreb, Croatia. She was crowned the Snow Queen of that competition for the fourth time. This is her seventh straight World Cup slalom win and her 37th career slalom victory. I think the rest of the competition is probably starting to get a little bit tired of seeing Michaela win. But obviously, we're extremely excited about this amazing run that she's on. I mean, she really is confounding all expectations, even for somebody of her standard. So, yeah, I think a lot of people were glued to that. And she also won by over a second. So she really is, you know, continuing that dominant streak. It's quite amazing to see.
Where's our men's slalom team in all of this? Just don't see anything from them in this discipline.
Well, I think, you know, we have some restructuring going on in that team. And one of the big changes that we made at the start of this season was to take a pretty firm look at how we can put some procedures and processes in place that give us a longer-term opportunity to really get that men's slalom team back to where we want them to be. Having said that, the men's team overall, maybe not specifically the slalom team, but the men's team overall are having a really good season, Bryce Bennett in particular. But I think, you know, we do have this big project called Project 26, which is looking at 2026 and how we can make sure that we've got talent coming through there for the games that, in that year. And I think that what you're going to see is an upward curve in performance from not only from the slalom team, but from the men's team overall. So fingers crossed we see some immediate results, but we're putting the building blocks in place to make sure that we've got a longer term opportunity to really be that best in the world that we're trying to target.
All right. And in cross country, Jesse Diggins finishing the Tour de Ski. How did she do?
Yeah, Tour de Ski, an incredibly grueling exercise. 7 races in 9 days. Jesse had a podium and through one of those days finished the whole event in 6th place overall, which is a very, very strong result. Jesse actually sees that Tour de Ski as kind of mid-season preparation. She uses it almost like a kind of springboard for the rest of the season. So for her, 6th place is a good result. She's taking a little bit of time off now to recharge and recover, and then she'll come back even stronger for the second half of the season. So I think we can expect to see even more and improved results from Jesse and the rest of the team as we go along. But I think keep an eye on that team. They're really producing some good results in both the men's and the women's side. And I think that with a packed schedule to come for the rest of the season, and obviously they've got a World Championships as well in a few short weeks, I think that we've got some really high hopes for that team and for Jesse in particular.
Yeah. She lost, lost a lot of time due to icing on her ski. So I'm just curious, others didn't suffer that same problem, huh?
Well, occasionally this happens. You know, you can put all of the preparation in place. And Jesse is very much the kind of tip of the spear. There's an enormous team that is working with her, wax technicians and trainers and coaches and a whole bunch of other folks. And just occasionally, you know, you maybe made the wrong decision about something. And, yeah, sometimes this happens. That, you know, that's part of sport. But I think part of the challenge is how you bounce back from that and how you make sure that you learn those kind of lessons. And our team is very, very good at doing so. I think you only have to look back a few short years and you'll see that we weren't even in contention for the sort of positions that we're challenging for now. So an occasional slip up is not something that I think we're overly concerned about, but it is something that we can learn from.
Okay. The LLB U.S. Cross Country Championships just wrapped up. Any news to report there?
Yeah. As you say, just wrapped up in Crossbury Outdoor Center in Vermont. Caitlin Patterson, who's a local from Crossbury, won the women's 20K freestyle. And David Norris, who's from all the way up in Fairbanks, Alaska, won the men's 30K freestyle. We have some really good talent coming through the ranks there in cross country. And I think it's very good for us to be able to see a success at something like the 2018 Olympic Games, where obviously Jesse and Keegan won that historic gold. And that's just serving as inspiration for the next generation to come through. We've got some amazing young athletes coming through the ranks. And I had them having the opportunity to go and compete in something like that cross-country championship at Crossbury, you know, is an opportunity for them to show their mettle. And I think we're very pleased and we're going to be keeping a very close eye on Caitlin and on David and their compatriots. And they will be looking to fill the shoes of somebody like Jesse Diggins in the future.
Sure. And tomorrow, Park City Council scheduled to approve the Master Festival license for World Championships. And what, we're just less than a month away here. All ready to go?
Less than 30 days to go. And I can tell you it is absolutely flat out getting ready for that. We're very, very excited about the athletes coming into town to take part in that. And I think the excitement levels are starting to build, not just in our team, but across all the athletes and everybody coming in. So expect to see more and more about those World Championships on TV and in newspapers, magazines, and on websites as we head towards it. We're very, very excited and working very hard to put on an amazing show.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Tom?
No, I just want to say Happy New Year to everybody. Have a great New Year. And we're excited to see continuing positive developments across our whole team.
Okay. Tom, thank you. That's Tom Webb, spokesman for U.S. Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.